Hey, Meg and Dr. G here with SPKN, the Sport Professional Knowledge Network. And today we're sitting down with two people who have decided that the coach-athlete relationship needs a little push in the right direction, Mr. Ian Goldberg and Dr. Sophia Jowett. Ian is the CEO of iSport 360, but more importantly, a father of two incredible girls that love sports. Prior to founding iSport 360, Ian spent most of his career in digital marketing and product development. However, he actually started at the White House working for economic advisors to two US presidents. Sophia is a sports psychologist and professor at Loughborough University in the UK. She also is an associate fellow and chartered psychologist with the British Psychological Society, consulting with athletes and coaches from a wide range of sports. Her work mainly revolves around interpersonal relationships in sport with an emphasis on the coach-athlete relationship. Ian and Sophia, welcome to SPKN.
Thanks for having us, Meg.
Thank you.
Let's just start right in with the most basic of questions. Sophia, maybe you can start us off with what is the coach-athlete relationship and why is it important?
What is the coach-athlete relationship? Such a good question. And if you ask each one of us, probably is going to provide a different sort of definition or description. The way that we have described it or try to define it over the years through the research we have done, clearly it's multidimensional and is dynamic and involves a coaches and an athlete's interpersonal feelings, thoughts, and behaviors. And we have operationalized those quite abstract concepts through through the interpersonal constructs of closeness, commitment, and complementarity, respectively. So we are capturing coaches and athletes' emotions, feelings, things like their mutual trust, respect, appreciation, and indeed liking one another, because that makes our relationships in life a little bit easier if we like people that we work with. It also captures coaches and athletes' intentions and willingness to maintain a close relationship over time, because we all know, we have worked with coaches and athletes, performance accomplishments, skill development, talent development doesn't happen overnight. We need time to work with one another through the highs and the lows. And commitment is the glue that keeps coaches and athletes together over challenging times more so. And last but not least, coaches and athletes' interpersonal behaviors, the type of behaviors that underline their collaboration and cooperation, such as being responsive to each other's efforts, being receptive, being friendly, and certainly at ease and comfortable in each other's presence. So this is in a nutshell, and I hope I have provided a lot of context for your viewers to kind of think, analyze, and reflect how they think of their relationships and how they, more importantly, assess the quality of their relationships.
But it's not just a matter of liking someone. I mean, it sounded as you were describing that for some reason I had in my mind that you had to be positive all the time and always happy and always I know that people might find that a little fluffy for coaches, even though that's, you know, kind of what we hope is that they're going in that direction, because they're probably a little the other direction. But there needs to be more than just that fluffiness, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Liking is an interesting interpersonal concept. And a lot of coaches, when I go into coach education sessions and I've got a number of coaches in front of me, when I referred to liking, they do kind of raise their eyebrow and say, do I really want to like? Do I need to like my athletes? Do they need to like me? Now, we just have to think a little bit here, because if you have a tendency to like certain athletes, you're more likely to give them that a little bit more, that a little extra compared to those athletes that perhaps you indeed dislike or you like a little less. And, we are all human beings and we have our biases. And I think liking is a positive bias toward your athletes, which is a good thing to have. And to be perfectly honest, it's so easy to develop in your interactions with your athletes. You just need to get to know them and find certain commonalities. Even if you like the same films, for example, or indeed have this similar goals, these are the type of things that connect you, and you start, you know, developing that sort of interpersonal quality that we call liking.
What would you say to, say, I don't know, a football coach that might say they don't need to like me, they need to respect me?
That is interesting. Athletes will probably work much better than with coaches who they like. And what does this mean? And in fact, let me just give you an example that, you know, for those who have kids, their own kids, they do come home from school and say, I really love that teacher. She's so passionate and energetic, and she teaches me, you know, this and that. And, you know, you see the excitement when our kids come home and say, oh, I like my teacher. She's a good teacher. As opposed to when our kids come from the school and say, this teacher is horrible. I hate him or her. So, it makes life a little bit easier if our athletes like us as coaches. And as I said, it doesn't take too much for coaches to be liked. They just need to show a little bit of interest, a little bit of interest in them as human beings, not necessarily, or not just as athletes, but also as human beings. You know, what are their interests and what are their needs? You know, and the key to all of that for me, for liking, for respect, for trust, for appreciation, is really to, for coaches to open that door to get to know their athletes, to start really understanding their athletes and getting under their skin, and that will create that reciprocal connection, whether it is liking, respect, appreciation. All of these things are good to have. And if for whatever reason liking is not part of their relationship yet, or their interactions, it's not quite that quality developed quite yet. Like you said, if there is respect, trust, and appreciation, they are close. They are emotionally connected at some level or another, which is a good thing to have. Liking is another quality that I think it is equally important, however, and perhaps, you know, coaches need to think and try it. Why not?
You set that up perfectly. Speaking of connecting with your coaches, Ian, can you tell us a little bit about how you founded iSport 360? What inspired you to jump up and say, okay, let's do this?
Yeah, absolutely. So as you mentioned in your intro, I've been coaching my two daughters in soccer and basketball here in suburban New Jersey for a bunch of years. But I really saw a disconnect between the coaches and the players. And most of it was because of the parents. And I'm part of a generation of parents that I'll admit some guilt. We are overbearing at times. We are overzealous at times. And in many ways, we try to support our kids in their youth sports effort, but we become an obstacle or a barrier to their learning when we speak for them, when we make decisions for them, when we scream out from the bleachers, shoot, 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 when in fact they should be making their own decisions. And for me, there was the moment of epiphany was I was coaching 8-year-old girls in soccer. And one game, one of the girls came off the field crying because I was calling out instructions to her. And she told me her mom was on the other sideline telling her the exact opposite thing to do. And it was really stressful for this little 8-year-old. And I felt terrible. But that was an important moment because I agree with Dr. Sophia. Interpersonal relationships between coaches and players can make or break a season, can make or break a team. And I would also just add to that, Meg, like we're in an age that unfortunately has been defined by the most horrible coaches and the most horrible abusive situations, to the point where coaches are a little bit afraid to have interpersonal relationships with their young players, and parents fear that too. But we know that great relationships are built on love and trust. So we need to build that up in a very careful, deliberate way.
So what exactly is iSport 360?
So iSport 360 is a software platform. It's an app. We have about 200,000 coaches, kids, and parents on the platform right now. And I wanted to simulate all of the communication and collaboration tools that teachers and parents and kids use in the classroom and take all of those best practices and tools and bring them to the ball fields. So I wanted to help coaches work with their players directly without interference from the parents to set goals, to share feedback, to share practice assignments and training videos and motivational videos in a team locker room. But to make this a safe place for kids, parents are able to see every bit of communication between the coach and their player. That also keeps us in compliance with Safe Sport, of course.
And if you can't make them be quiet on the field, are they not going to be just jumping right in the conversation online?
Well, our thesis is that parents are amped up on the sidelines, usually because they don't feel like they're part of the process. They don't know why their child didn't start the game or didn't get more playing time or didn't make the travel team. When you have this very open, transparent means of communication, by using our app, parents can see what the team is working on at practice. They could see the feedback that the coach is giving their kids after the game, after their practice. They could see player evaluations. So they have a much better idea of how their kid's doing. And then they could just really enjoy their coffee and relax on the sideline rather than being so amped up.
That's interesting because I have to say when coaches come to me and they're like, how do I get these parents off my back? It always has been give them more communication. I mean, you and I share that sideline situation. And it's one of those things where we feel like we have to make sure that our kids are getting what we want them to from sport. We want to, you know, kind of contribute and be supportive and make sure that the coach kind of, for lack of a better way of saying it, has it under control. And once we know that they've got this going, then we can kind of back off. And so I've always been talking about, you know, make sure that you tell the parents what's going on and they will leave you alone. Here, you're actually changing that direction of the communication to the kids, but the parents then know that it's going on, which kind of alleviates the coaches having to go to the parents and speak to them individually. So it's much more efficient. I think that's fantastic that they can see that. Do you think that with parent oversight, you're going to get the authentic communication that goes between the coach and the athlete? I mean, is this mainly for youth sports?
So this is mainly for youth sports. This is primarily on our platform. We have mostly teams between 7 years old and 14 years old. So definitely ages when parents want to be very involved in their kids' activities and communication. But at the same time, we want to encourage an 8-year-old, for example, let's even just say, an 8-year-old girl, we want to encourage communication between her and her coach. In person, that 8-year-old might be very intimidated by, say, a 45-year-old man or a woman who's the coach. But when they're on their device, that's how they communicate anyway these days. So it's much easier to get that feedback and maybe even respond or embrace that feedback. So we're giving them a way to do it that's very comfortable and natural for them.
Hiring young kids out of college, I kind of wish that they would actually talk to the person and not use their device. Learn how to do that.
Absolutely. We need more of that. I agree.
Sophia, now you've too, I mean, similarly, you've been doing more and more applied work, I think, as well, in workshops and trainings. Does this sort of thing ring a bell too for what you're seeing and doing?
The applied work that I do is mainly with coaches, and what we are trying to do is to try to impress upon them the importance of relationships and understand how to do it and do it well. It is interesting what I heard about communication. I find that coaches, whilst parents can be a little bit tricky, as you said, Ian, I think coaches could do a better job, particularly at junior levels, in terms of communicating openly, transparently, honestly, with their young athletes as well as their parents. I think this is lacking. And what strikes me as well is when I talk about relationships, Brian, to a number of coaches, they feel that relationships is more about coaches and athletes at more senior levels. It's not something that they can see being applied readily at junior levels with younger athletes. However, as we all know in this group, we need to develop our athletes' social and relationship skills. We expect them when they are at senior levels to be able to be autonomous, to be able to be accountable, and responsible about their performance and about their development. But it has to start right for the junior levels, right from year 7, 8, 9, as early as it is possible. So coaches need to prioritize the, developing relationships. And relationships is a reciprocal, a dyadic phenomenon. It involves two people, the coach and the athlete. And coaches by making a priority when they coach their athletes to develop good connections, good interactions with their young athletes. The young athletes will understand and appreciate what it takes to develop good relationships with their coaches. And it is kind of, a reciprocal bi-directional sort of phenomenon. So coaches, by trying to develop a relationship, trying to connect, trying to understand what these young athletes, what it takes for these athletes to be motivated, what are their goals and aspirations, their fears, their likes, their dislikes. Athletes will reciprocate. This is how they will learn, by modeling their coaches. They will learn social skills right from the start. And when they are a bit older and more senior, they will be able to put those good skills that they have learned in their young ages into practice when they most need it.
I guess I'm just curious, in my own work or thinking about coach-athlete relationships and psychosocial skill development, and the so-called soft skills that are soft and they're very hard in a sense to learn and maybe to measure. So I just wonder how you two both think about that as you're trying to advance something that might get compared to the natural sciences, that operates more by laws or facts and kind of more solidified understandings, where something, when we're talking about a quality relationship, can vary psychologically, culturally, and these things are just messy. They seem to be more, but like you said at the beginning, Sophia, they're very complex and multidimensional. And there's a lot of ways to interact interpersonally.
So in response to that, Dr. G, I would say, if you look here in the United States at all of the apps that have been created in youth sports, the first problems they solved were the administrative challenges, like making sure the kid gets to the game at the right time, making sure they know where the field is, how long the practice is, maybe having some reminders to make sure they have their cleats, their water, a snack, whatever that is. Or maybe, scheduling tournaments and scheduling leagues. The first generation of youth sports technology in our country did that. When I started my company, I really felt like no one had addressed these soft skills, which are really hard to do. It's not black and white. It's not a science. But if you think about any problem in the world, it's usually based on lack of communication. And so that's where we're focusing. And, I'm very much in agreement with Dr. Sophia about the importance of learning interpersonal and psychosocial skills at a young age, and then you could apply that later. And as further support, every national governing body in the United States that oversees a sport has a list of psychosocial skills that they want kids to learn on the field at an early age. And our app supports those standards and those national governing bodies.
Yeah, just an observation in terms of, you know, what we call this psychosocial, I prefer to call them interpersonal social relationship skills. I was interested about the term that we use. I use it, soft skills. I think, as far as I'm concerned, they are the hardest skills to learn. there's nothing soft about them. Very, very hard. And our coaches, more than anyone, if we are to put right front and center interpersonal skills, because we acknowledge that coaching, after all, effective coaching, hinges on understanding people, and understanding people is about connecting, because we cannot understand each other unless we connect, and unless we develop a relationship, unless we develop a common ground. And therefore, we really need to focus on making our coaches much more socially competent, first and foremost. Of course, a coach's ability to teach a sport, the X and the O's, are absolutely paramount, but I take that for granted, because no coach will go coaching unless they have, you know, at least the very basic skills that their sport requires. And therefore, I think the next generation of coaches is for us to ensure that they are the most competent that they can be when it comes to social and interpersonal skills. And that will give us an opportunity to pass on these skills to our young athletes.
I was thinking about the soft skills, and I've been calling them life skills because I hate soft skills. I think it's, I don't know why, but it seems kind of like unimportant, and it really is the base. As you say, you know, hopefully they know what to coach because they have interest in this sport or they've played it, but how to coach is a whole nother animal.
Well, just, I mean, even the tactical and the technical aspects are all relational anyway. So, I mean, it's one of these taken for granted things that it's so obvious to point out. And kind of, I said it once years ago when somebody said it to me, it was a good observation. Coaches need athletes. Athletes don't need coaches, you know? So, I mean, and it's kind of bizarre, right? Because coaches do enhance the performance of the teams and athletes usually, but an athlete can be an athlete without a coach. A coach is not going to be a coach without athletes. It's kind of like the leaders and followers kind of dilemma too. But you can't do anything as a coach without being in relation to, you know, athletes in the team. So we take that for granted, that when we're doing anything else, including our sports science or our skill acquisition or team building exercises, those seem more obvious, but everything happens in a social relational manner.
And it is interesting to just, you know, follow it up a little bit, Brian, with this. More recently, I kind of started thinking about the differentiation between coach and you know, coach effectiveness. Coach is a role, for example, that a position that one plays or has, and then coaching and coaching effectiveness. And for me, coaching is the is an interpersonal situation. It's an interpersonal affair that involves the coach and the athlete. Coaching is not the right of the coach. It's not something that belongs you know, to the coach. Coaching is the interpersonal process that involves both the coach and the athlete, or an interpersonal practice, however you want to see it. But often we kind of confuse the coach and the coaching, and we use, you know, these terms synonymously. And I get a little bit frustrated, because for me, coaching is a different element or concept or idea from a coach, which is, again, something different. And I don't know how you feel and whether you differentiate those two, but this is a basic differentiation, I think, and amongst, you know, ourselves and experts in academia who talk about coaching and coaches, I don't think we make the differentiation.
Yeah, I agree, and actually in an article in my head that I haven't written, you know, there's some other good research, obviously, and philosophers have debated about various things like this for, you know, millennia, and so. Yeah, I really wish we could get out of coach effectiveness, but I do like how in education they debated years ago too, cause and effect, or trying to attribute, you know, a coach or behavior or a context, and that it incurs a certain effect, cause and effect, you know, that there's causal mechanisms in place. I wish sometimes we would kind of use effectiveness in that regard. Did you get the effect that you were trying to? But I think And again, a good article by Gary Fenstermacher in teaching, and there's a co-author too, but maybe Richardson, where they talk about teacher quality. And it's in a similar thing. I think quality can be a more robust measure or a more robust conceptualization than just saying coach effectiveness. And the same thing like coaching too, like coaching has different goals. That's the hardest part too, I think, is that, you know, one of the things that we deal with in sport is it's played at and participated at every level for different reasons. You know, sometimes it's participation, sometimes it's performance, sometimes it's economics, sometimes it's a combination of things. Sometimes it's interpersonal relationships with, you know, kids and youth and others want to hang out and make friends and build skills. But we're essentially doing the same thing with sport, right? We're playing soccer or football or baseball, but the meaning of it and the practices of it can change dramatically in that, in it, but it, we're doing the same sort of thing. I think that's quite confusing for folks too.
Is there a spot on the app for feedback and kind of like ranking, you know, any kind of form for giving feedback and performance? I don't know what you call it, rankings.
Yes. So let's take the word rankings and let's.
Yeah.
Throw that off to the
side. I didn't want to use that one, but I couldn't come up with anything else.
Well, that's kind of a good shot, too. You can tell he's a basketball guy with that. Yeah.
Unfortunately, many, many youth sports organizations use rankings to make decisions about what kids make what teams. I hate rankings, especially when they're done subjectively. Like when a coach just lists, okay, here's my team, and I'm going to, you know, here's the top five players, here's the bottom five. On our platform, we don't use rankings. On our platform, there is the opportunity for coaches and players to share feedback at any time in free form, you know, any topic, any skill, any ways that coach thinks player can improve. That's one feature. But then separately, we have a player evaluation tool.
That's which, the word I was looking for, evaluation.
Okay. Evaluation, or even also known as an assessment in the world of education. So on our platform, the app sets goals for every player and every team based on their sport, their age, their gender, and some other criteria. Once we set goals for the player, we then assess how well each player is achieving that goal. That is a very objective way for a coach to evaluate a player. So we're not evaluating that player based on other players, and we're not evaluating that player based on what the coach thinks is good performance. It's based on very well-defined standards, otherwise known as a rubric in the world of education too. So we're trying to bring all of these education best practices into youth sports.
Sophia, you have research that includes the four C's. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Happily, yes, of course. So the four C's represent coaches and athletes' interpersonal feelings. So we touched upon closeness and reflects coaches and athletes' affective ties in the form of mutual trust, respect, appreciation, and liking. So these are the four core affective ties between a coach and an athlete, which will indicate to each one of us the level of closeness that has been achieved in an individual coach-athlete dyad or relationship. Commitment reflects coaches and athletes' interpersonal thoughts, particularly their intentions or willingness to maintain a close relationship over time. And as I said, commitment really reflects the glue that connects the coach and the athlete through highs and lows. So injury, burnout, other personal issues destabilize the relationship quality between the coach and the athlete often. And commitment, the express commitment that the coach and the athlete have is what keeps the coach and the athlete together during, you know, challenging interpersonal situations that they might have. Complementarity reflects coaches and athletes' behaviors, the type of cooperative and collaborative behaviors As I said, the level of receptiveness, responsiveness, friendliness, and easiness that exists between the coach and the athlete. Also, complementarity reflects coaches and athletes' specific roles that they take within the relationship. So the coach is expected more often than not to be able to lead, to instruct, to provide feedback, and the athlete is more likely to be expected to execute instructions, to filter information in and out, take what he or she thinks is valuable to them, and kind of push aside other information that perhaps they don't feel it is important to them at that point in time. We kind of viewed closeness, interpersonal feelings, commitment, interpersonal thoughts, particularly intentions to keep a relationship that is close over time. And then we have complementarity, which taps into the behaviors, the collaborative behaviors between the coach and the athlete. And finally, co-orientation. Co-orientation reflects the level to which the coach and the athlete have reached the level of similarity and understanding, the mutual similarity and mutual understanding that these two people have achieved over the course of their partnership. And of course, you know, less established relationships have a little less co-oriented views. And more established relationships have more co-oriented views as a result of their interactions. They've got much more mutual knowledge and understanding about one another and about their relationship. So these are closeness, commitment, complementarity, and co-orientation. This is the way that we capture the quality of the coach-athlete relationship. It's a way that we can tangibly understand a very elusive, very abstract phenomenon. And if you ask me, oh, communication is important. Yes, of course it is. And where is it in the model? We can't see it. Communication, the way we have understood it through the research we are doing is, whilst it's not part of relationship quality, it's certainly a determinant, a source of relationship quality. So it's the fuel. It's the fuel that makes the engine, which is the relationship, tick over time. And also, the relationship quality is likely to influence communication as well. So it's an outcome of relationship quality or lack of relationship quality as well. So think of communication, or perhaps the relationship quality being sandwiched by communication. You know, both sides of it. That is it. Communication, very, very important, but it's just sitting outside relationship quality, outside the four C's. And then another thing maybe I will mention, because again, it is important when we come to understand our relationships, which is such a complex phenomenon to kind of capture at a glance, is that we use different perspectives to view our relationships, not only our coach-athlete relationship, but any type of relationship that we form with our partners, our teachers, our employers. And this is, we call it direct perspective and meta perspective. So we take a direct perspective to view or assess, evaluate our relationships. So my direct perspective here today relative to you is that I trust you. You all have your knowledge, your expertise, your experiences. So I trust you in the ways that we relate here and now. But I also have formed what I call meta perspective, which is my evaluation about how you think about me. And I think, you know, having this conversation with you today, that you trust me as well. You trust what I say to you, because you're attentive. You are interested in what I say. So we usually have two perspectives to capture our relationship: the direct, which is our self perceptions, how we think about people, but also our meta perspective, which is how we think other people think about us. Both perspectives very, very powerful in shaping the quality of relationship. And those perspectives are also quite correlated. You know, they are not entirely distinct. How I feel about you is likely to influence how you feel about me, how I think you feel about me.
We're just very good at impression management and surface acting too.
True, right. Yeah.
There's a theoretical detour. I guess Ian too, and Sophia too. So, you know, let's get very practical for a minute too. If somebody's listening too, right, what do I do if I'm a coach? What do I do to enhance my coach athlete relationship, or, you know, even on like the platforms that you have, are you able to see what's meaningful, or maybe what might be one of those bigger kind of processes or causal mechanisms to induce a good outcome? Like, how do I do it now? Fine. Sign me up. What do I do? How do I do it better?
I'm really glad you asked that, because I love the four C's, Dr. Sophia. And the funny thing about the millions of volunteer coaches and youth sport coaches, the funny thing is they want to achieve the four C's, but they don't know about the four C's probably unless they're reading, you know, your research. But the fact is, if a volunteer coach for a child's team can achieve the four C's, and for example, get kids to be comfortable around him or her, get them to laugh at his jokes, get them to feel confident in their abilities, get them to like one another, then the parents on that team will stop questioning that coach about, why did my child, not play third base today when I wanted them to play first base? Or why did you sub out my child early in the game? That stuff, the X's and O's, the strategy becomes much less important. And the parents and the kids are way more focused on the fun factor, the laughter, the team culture, the confidence. And, you know, so that's, I think that's the practical application for the four C's.
Unfortunately, we're running out of time. I don't know. Sophia, do you want to quickly?
You made such a good point. I really, truly thank you for that, because the parents, once they know that their kids are enjoying wholeheartedly their sport and their coaches have their back, or their coaches have want to develop them, want to grow them, you know, they're interested in each one player in the squad, in the team, in the group. That's all the parents want, and become less of a factor. Parents that, see coaches that either they don't pay attention to their kids, or they're not selected, you know, for reasons that they don't understand. So the point that you made is absolutely fantastic. And if we can impress that to the coaches as well, maybe we will save them a lot of grief, in inverted commas, from dissatisfied parents. So thanks, Ian. Just that's all I wanted to say, Nate.
And Meg, I would only add, the reverse is true. If parents feel like the coach doesn't support their child, doesn't love their child, and there's not a relationship and trust there, parents will find every reason to complain about that coach. You know, the coach made the practice too early. I don't like the decisions the coach made. You know, things just fall apart without the four C's.
And if we just encourage our coaches, the power of relationship is just tremendous. But it starts with the leader, and our coaches are the leaders, and they have such power and influence over our young athletes that we need to really highlight, underline, underscore the importance of relationships. But it starts, the buck starts with them, I believe. They've got most of the power. So let's hope that the message lands with them.
Well, I wish we had so much more time. I there's a whole section we wanted to talk about with managing conflict and power relations, but we'll have to have you guys back on to talk about that. Thank you so much for taking your time, and we look forward to having you on again at a later date.
We're going to get into it next time about the use of alliteration as well in academia. It is rampant and it needs to stop.
No, I like it. I like it a lot. It's one of my favorite parts about academia.
There's too many C's, and we didn't even talk about positive psychology or positive youth development and all their C's too. It's just, it's too much.
Yeah, well, there's psychodoping is something we need to get into as well. So, well, we have lots to do.
Thanks so much for having us on, guys.
Thank you very much indeed.
Thanks for listening. Make sure to leave us a 5-star review and hit the follow button, because there's more sport knowledge on the way. If you're interested in more information or want to engage in further conversation about these and other issues in sport, visit our website at spknmedia.com. To stay updated on all things SPKN, follow us on social media at SPKN Media or email us at team@spknmedia.com, and we'll be happy to welcome you to the SPKN community.